And we're live. Okay. Ray Pete, Georgie Ninkov, we were just talking about, Mexico, but what I really wanted to talk about just everything that's happened, you know, I think last time we were talking the Russia Ukraine stuff was just kind of coming to a head, and, I unpack it for us, Ray. What do you think's going on, and give us your unique perspective?
Everyone should really understand what the Azov Battalion is, and that they were an extremist group. They were, for example, involved in setting a union hall on fire while there were dozens of people inside. And if they came out, they killed them, and most of them burned to death. And they march under a swastika flag, and their hero is Bandera, who was a major genocidist under Hitler. So they're just about the nastiest people that you can imagine. They were integrated into Ukraine's National Guard because the breakaway republics favored unions and are nominally favoring socialism. Since the Nazis, they aren't the same as the Azov Battalion, but the oligarch-related Nazis control the government in Kiev. They get along nicely together, and the government in the Donetsk breakaway area, the Azov Battalion is leading an attempt to genocide the Russian-speaking population. Kiev assigned them that job after they outlawed speaking Russian, and all rights for the Russian national citizens, as well as Russian-speaking people, ethnic Russians. The Kiev government has been shelling them constantly now for, I guess it's 7 years.
Didn't they send the Azov Battalion and they crucified some people in the Eastern Republics?
That's what I've heard. I didn't want to look at the videos.
And how does this play into the larger empire game? Like, do you think this whole thing kicked off as like kind of a cover for the biggest crime of the century? Like maybe that's part of going.
You know, the Victorian Newland thing that they were openly talking about installing a puppet government in 2014 and explaining that they had invested a lot of money in it. And crucial to the coup was having several snipers killing the Ukraine policemen as well as demonstrators to get the people believing that the government was killing demonstrators, but they were killing police and trying to get them against the mob. That was when the elected president left. So it was a very U.S. promoted coup right from the start. And the nominal purpose publicly is that the U.S. Under Clinton decided that they should expand NATO right up to all of Russia's borders after having Bush promising Gorbachev that NATO would not expand another inch. But that was just to relax the Russians so they could move nuclear weapons right up to all of their borders. When Putin became active in saying that he couldn't tolerate any more of the advances after several of the little former Russian republics had been assimilated by NATO. Russia fought back in Georgia and what was the other area that they militarily quashed the move to integrate with NATO. And that the nominal desire to have NATO right up against all of Russia's borders, making it the next step would be to use those weapons to threaten Russia up to the point that they could change the government and break up the Russian state so that that vast amount of resources could be divided up, just what Hitler had in mind. And this attitude of the U.S. and Britain has continued now since the First World War. Their purpose has been to keep Russia from cooperating closely with Germany, because Germany has always had the leading technology and Russia has had the unlimited resources in potential grain production, timber, and all sorts of essential and voluminous minerals. And so if Hitler's plan, for example, to conquer Russia and take their resources, everyone realized that would give Germany absolute control of the world. So that was in their minds at World War II, and it continues. Anything that would favor Germany doing business with Russia has been inactivated in various ways, and now getting world opinion such that Germany is practically forced to cut off their main energy supplies, the cheap natural gas and oil from Russia, is very essential to the German economy. But by creating the embarrassing situation in world opinion, they have forced their puppet government of Germany to turn off their energy supply and eventually bankrupt themselves. And meanwhile, the U.S. Keeps buying vast amounts of Russian gas and oil. It's the Germans, they don't want to have cheap gas and oil.
How does lowlife like Nuland get on the record plotting to kill foreign officials and people and still not fall under that U.S. law that basically prohibited U.S. officials from doing that abroad?
The international law is a concept that came in with United Nations. And when the U.S. talks about the rules, what they mean is they're absolutely throwing out the tradition of 70 years of international law.
But I think there's an actual U.S. law which prohibited, I think it was, I forget when it was passed, but basically it said that no U.S. government employee is allowed to actively plot the assassination of a foreign government official. This is a law that's on the U.S. books. And if
but all of the treaties are technically the law in the U.S. When Congress ratifies a treaty, that makes it a national law. And if you look at the history of U.S. treaties, no one obeys the law.
Right. Yeah. So basically, they follow whatever law suits them. But when it comes down to restricting you know, special the secret operations or things like that abroad, the law doesn't apply.
So how does this navigate kind of the oligarchs into a one world government situation? Is this like something that was standing in their way, or how does a person understand that?
Their one world government has to be ruled by the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
There are these actual extremists in the government since Kennedy's time. It's been very obvious that they seriously believed better dead than red, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff was constantly maneuvering to get a world war using atomic weapons going.
Well, one of the big narratives, like the so-called liberal Democrats are like pro-Ukraine, the so-called right-leaning Republicans are pro-Russia, and then the super like kind of fringe conspiracy people are saying, oh, it's a big show, the whole thing is theater. And so why would you reject that whole thing that Putin is like playing a villain so they can do a cyber attack and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Why would you like vehemently reject that?
Trump was a big interference with their plan, the American plan to establish, to keep Germany as a puppet state and to do everything to end up dissolving the Russian state. And when Trump said he could do business with Russia and he didn't think wars were a good idea, immediately they said he was conspiring with Putin. And that whole thing was a conspiratorial fabrication coming out of the Democrats' party organization, with Hillary leading the way, referring to Putin as a Hitler.
And then where do you see this all leading? You know, like the last time we talked, it felt like it was just getting off the ground, and it's like gotten so intense so quickly, and it's hard to imagine that it's going to go, it's not going to get a lot worse.
Where Russia is losing ground is in their public relations, because the story of satanic Putin has been so efficiently propagated, even sane people can't hear what they hear and can't see what they read. Like someone emailed me that Putin, on the day he recognized the republics, said his purpose was to decommunize the Ukraine, that he is actually a fascist. And what I heard him say in that speech was his purpose was to denazify the Ukraine, nothing about decommunizing them. And so his purpose, since the breakaway republics favored socialism and unions, they had to say that his purpose in stopping the Azov battalion from shelling civilians, his purpose really was to go in and commit genocide against the socialists.
Have you seen the other claims that Putin is basically trying to reestablish the USSR?
I've heard suggestions of that, but under him, one of the critics' lines is to say that because Putin frequently uses the word God and spiritual values and traditional morality, that means he's a not very secret fascist. But the communists got to the point where Stalin had stopped the active persecution of religion in the early 1940s because he saw that nearly everyone in Russia was an Orthodox true believer. And so he said, what's the Socialist Party doing persecuting their main supporters? And Putin is following Stalin to that degree. He's using the common concepts natural to his country of spiritual values, honoring traditional morality, and speaking in the terms involving references to God, and that really offends, like a lot of the so-called Marxists and communists in Russia, hate him for that. They want to go back to the old-fashioned persecution of believers. And so when he talks in a national, ethnic manner, they say that means he's a fascist and wants to, among other things, restore the kind of communism that existed under Stalin and others.
Have you seen some of the polls in the former Soviet republics? I think with the notable, the actual people on the ground in numbers of 2/3 or more favor the return of the Soviet Union simply because they say their lives were more stable or at least more human under the old system. And right now you have 1% owning everything and 99% living in basically abject poverty and fear.
The average citizen lost everything, pensions, jobs, and so on, and for transferring state property to the oligarchs under with the leadership of economists from Harvard.
Yeah. Do you think there's a how would you estimate the risk of a, I don't know, third world war? Because the way things are going now, if Russia wins the war in Ukraine, basically the it throws a major wrench into the will of the plans that the West had for this part of the world.
I think Biden is already showing that that would totally make the Western rulers insane, and the way he talks is pretty insane.
And also the West kind of loses credibility. If Russia achieves its goal in Ukraine, then basically it shows the West and the entire world that it's still a great power, and it can pose credible challenge to the empire.
That's a great problem for the West. They see it as a potentially terminal condition for them, so they will resort to anything to resist that. I think they're going to start saying that even though the Ukraine was easy to defeat, the Russians had to use massive genocidal methods, and they'll be claiming that Russia has committed atrocities all across the country.
Yeah.
The shelling of the breakaway republics has killed at least 10,000 people over these last 7 years.
And even if we put aside the actual winning the war in Ukraine, now Russia being isolated financially and politically under the, of course, the guidance of the empire, it's Russia and China are being pushed together by basically no desire of their own, but now they have to cooperate in order to survive this. And if they come up with an alternative payment system and start trading all these commodities in something other than the U.S. dollar, then that's pretty much game over for the dollar, wouldn't it be?
That's what the West has seen coming now for years. When the U.S. Froze Russian assets and stopped the financial transactions. The Russians had almost equivalent power. They could have frozen the Western assets in Russia with great damage to people in the U.S. and could turn off their cheap gas and several other things that they could have retaliated with it against the sanctions. But what they're doing is not trying to punish the West, but trying to just shift their business to China.
Right, but economically united Russia and China are essentially, that's a checkmate for the West. Other than a major war to subjugate that union, the West doesn't really have any other cards.
No. I think it's almost unavoidable that China and Russia are going to come out in a functional control position.
Okay. So if the elite wanted eventually the U.S. dollar to go away anyway so that they can replace it with their digital currency, do you think that may actually help their plans? The fact that the Russia and China alliance may accelerate the demise of the dollar, or do you think it's happening too fast for their taste?
I'm not sure, but I think the dollar is already experiencing that movement away from the petroleum-supported dollar. That was going away from the petroleum dollar was what got Iraq and Libya murdered. They were introducing a gold-backed finance system, so they had to be killed to save the value of the dollar. But now they can't do that to China and Russia, who are moving basically in the same direction Libya and Iraq did regarding oil prices.
With the way things are going right now, and with the war and further supply chain disruptions, which is what the elite calls them, do you see the potential for inflation continues rapidly in the United States, and maybe even civil unrest breaking out over these ridiculous prices?
The inflation is already happening because of the actions they've taken for the pandemic. But I think it's blending right into the world moving away with China and Russia getting together. So I think there's nowhere to go for the dollar except losing value faster and faster.
And what do you think would be a financial move on the elite's part? Introduce quickly the CBDCs, or?
Basically controlling, they can cancel the bank access simply the way Canada did. Confiscate the money of people, independent actions of all sorts, and force people quickly into the digital credit card economy.
But in order for that to happen, Trudeau, by the way, declared martial law, or he invoked that law that's essentially equivalent to the martial law. What would it take to do that in the United States, unless there is some kind of a civil unrest?
Didn't take any law at all to do all of the illegal mandates. They knew that a state of emergency existed. They didn't talk about it. But I think we've had a continuing state of emergency now for many years. And so they can get away with martial law behavior without having to declare anything.
So you think they will just be able to freeze people's deposits and get away with it?
Yeah.
Well, somebody listening to this might say, oh, I don't care about the Ukraine or Russia stuff, but the effect on the food chain, that's one of the consequences of this. Have you been following that at all, Ray?
Not in detail, their expressed policy now for several years, starting well before the pandemic, is to phase out what they called the legacy economy, the small businesses all across the country, to destroy them one way or another. And the mandates simply telling people they couldn't continue running their restaurant or gym or whatever business they said wasn't essential. And so they just by fiat confiscated or destroyed businesses, forcing people to deal with places like Amazon. And so Jeff Bezos practically has doubled his wealth because of the pandemic.
And I was specifically referring to, like, doesn't Russia export like all of the wheat or something? And so that would hurt farmers even more.
Ukraine.
Yeah. Anyway.
And they could do all kinds of boycotts. They could find many other markets than the U.S. and Europe for all of their excess production, grain and petroleum in particular. But rare minerals that are essential to the Western economy, they could turn those off, simply turn off Western technology industry.
And Russia and Belarus together are, I think, are responsible for 2/3 of the fertilizer used around the world to grow food. And if they stop the exports of that, then nobody grows food, no matter where they are, at least at an industrial level, right? I mean, people can do it in their yards.
They're in a position of tremendous leverage over Europe and the U.S., but they see such actions as leading to retaliation militarily, and they're very in not retaliating for the.
And then again, people hate when I ask you to speculate, but could you see maybe a cyber attack performed by CIA and associated? Could that be like a sink into some kind of war situation?
And it could happen anywhere as long as it is convincingly blamable on the Russians. That's their basic thing.
And that
he doesn't even have to be convincingly blamable. It's like the virus. It's whatever they say. It's unconfirmable.
Well, especially if,
and they're right at the point of being able to declare a pandemic of Marburg hemorrhagic fever virus. That's one of the things that could hold things in a crisis state. But huge false flag operation is very likely.
I mean, the trauma of staying home and not seeing your loved ones might pale in comparison to not having water or food or turning on the power. That might be really bad. Do you have any more news on the Marburg stuff? I know you said they were readying a vaccine. Have you been following that? Have you seen more things? Because it seems like the public can only hold attention on one narrative. So it's going to be either Russia, Ukraine, or a new virus. Like, it would be difficult for... Go ahead.
Yeah, I think they are so in control of the media that they can let out little bits when one thing slacks in the news. They can pep things up by letting out a new danger. So they're alternating between a new virus, cyber attacks, all kinds of possible threats.
And Georgie, interrupt me if you have any more on the Ukraine-Russia stuff. But people did want me to ask you about the new information about the reverse transcription. Like, I mean, you've been saying this from day one. So have you seen anything that was interesting or unknown recently? I think Peter McCullough and some other people have been talking about a proof of maybe it was in the liver of the reverse transcription for the spike protein.
Showing it exists in the liver. Mm-hmm. A group at MIT and Harvard more than a year ago demonstrated that the process really does happen in cells, but showing that it happens in human liver cells is very important. Just by having a feeling for how cells operate right from the start, the claim of people like Fauci that introducing RNA is going to almost instantly lead to the degradation of that RNA, and it couldn't possibly be reverse transcribed, and the product of reverse transcription naturally couldn't get into the nucleus. So that was all like sophomoric molecular biology that Fauci had never studied. But anyone familiar with the actual workings of nucleic acids in the organism knows that those rules are made for the drug companies. Like the idea that you have to encapsulate RNA into some kind of a lipid membrane to get it in the cells. The lipid substance is actually designed to act as an adjuvant to stir up the immune system. But it's been known for a long time that naked RNA and naked DNA are circulating in our blood system all the time. And if you add a particular a type of RNA or DNA strand, it shows up very powerfully inside cells. You don't need anything to target the nucleic acid to make it go into cells. It can go right through the surface of the cell and begin to be incorporated into the nucleus. So the so-called principles that make such a thing impossible are nothing but the ignorant fantasy of the pharmaceutical people. And pharmaceutical people actually uncovered nucleic acid is going in and out of cells constantly, and that it goes in and out of the organism through body fluids, sweat, saliva, tears, urine. These nucleic acids originating in the body are coming out all of our surfaces. So that if you put a cold object under your nose so that the warm breath condenses on it and analyze it, then you find big molecules like nucleic acids and proteins in that condensed vapor. And that was incorporated into a manual when Pfizer was experimenting to develop the vaccine. They warned their people giving the vaccine not to let pregnant or nursing women be exposed to someone who is vaccinated. They were fully aware of this shedding process that is going on all the time.
And I couldn't be the only one that was fooled by the 5G nanotech graphene oxide. Can you, I'm sure you get that question all the time. Do you just want to extrapolate on that a little bit, your thoughts?
I listened to some of the early reports of the so-called discovery of graphene oxide. And these guys said they would be presenting full detailed evidence of how they identified it as graphene oxide, but that has never been presented. It's just there's junk in the vaccines, physical particles. Graphene oxide is compatible with what they see, and there were some publications proposing that for mind control and modification of cells that graphene oxide being able to pick up electromagnetic fields could be designed to translate electromagnetic fields into particular nervous and chemical effects in the cell. But that there are just a few articles proposing that, but what they did was blow it up and said it has already been done.
And then, Georgie, interrupt me anytime, so I was going to shift the topic. Something that I've been interested in these past few months talking to different people is that it seems like there's kind of themes, and maybe the people I talk to, and the theme currently is that people are doing, and this is not going to blow your mind in any way, because you've been talking about this for a long time, but people are doing significantly better on like a 1-to-2 ratio of T3 to T4 or a 1-to-1 than even a 1-to-3 or 1-to-4. And so since that's just fresh in my mind right now, I just thought maybe we'd concretize it here with just your thoughts on that. And like, why would somebody do better on a 1-to-1 or 1-to-2, right?
If you're, for example, under the influence of something like estrogen that is interfering with liver function and cell function in general, especially interfering with oxygen as the energy basis, after causing a shift to oxidation of fatty acids, then this wasting of oxygen as an energy source prevents the conversion of T4 to T3. The conversion requires a certain level of glucose as the energy source. So high estrogen women in particular are very, very frequently have a block between T4 and T3. That's been known for decades, that where T4 in a healthy young man works almost exactly like T3. In women, it's about 10 times less likely to be an adequate thyroid supplement for thyroxine alone or T4, because estrogen is such a deterrent to the conversion. Men under stress who have done too much aerobic exercise, for example, can't get their T3 to come back after the stress because factors such as aromatase have been activated by the stress and continue to interfere with the glucose function. And so stressed men and the average woman has a very low ability to convert thyroxine to the active hormone. And so if you give a ratio that has enough T3 to keep the oxidative system running, and then just enough T4 to fill in when there's a dip in energy availability. Everyone has their optimal ratio. Some people do fine on just thyroxine, but they weren't really the bulk of the hypothyroid population. It's a failure to convert that causes most hypothyroidism.
For yourself, can you detect a difference between a 1-to-1 and a 1-to-2?
No, I've never tried resolving it that fine.
And then, Georgie, interrupt me at any point.
I like something closer to 3-to-1.
Well, so you mix it yourself?
I'll go along for days at a time with nothing but Cino Plus, but then I definitely feel a boost if I bring it up to a 3-to-1 ratio.
Also, you supplement additional T3 to basically change the ratio. Okay.
And is that a climate or seasonal thing?
Is it what?
Like a seasonal or climate thing, like changing in the summer or winter?
The need for thyroid is usually about four times as high in a northern winter as during the summer. And for many years, I found that two grains of armor was just right for me in the winter, and only half a grain was enough to warm me up in the summer.
And then, Georgie, interrupt me at any point. Okay, so I wanted to talk about, because we only have 15 minutes here, heavy metals, right? That was something that kind of got talked about on the internet a little bit. And I know that you have an interesting specific perspective, including the redox balance into that equation, rather than just like the heavy metals are, I mean, they're harmful, but they're harmful in context with like the overly reduced redox state, right?
For example, if you're stressed for oxygen, that will bring up heme oxygenase, which turns heme into biliverdin, carbon monoxide, and free iron. And free iron in the presence of a deficiency of oxygen is reduced, producing hydroxyl radicals that cause oxidative damage. So the oxygen deficiency leads to a sort of explosive random type of oxidation damaging proteins and nucleic acids and everything.
So iron serves as like an emergency oxidizing agent?
What was the oxidation?
Iron, the free iron released serves as an emergency oxidizing agent?
In the presence of excess electrons, when oxygen is deficient, the oxygen should be disposing of the excess electrons, lowering the reductive pressure of the cell, and that should detoxify any free iron that's sitting there. It should stay in a harmless oxidized state, but the stress activates by having electrons escape and reduce the iron, so that the iron then reduces, converts things to free radicals.
And so would supplementing with quinones would essentially protect partially from iron toxicity?
I think that's how a lot of these so-called antioxidants work. Like inside the cell, ascorbic acid is an oxidant, not an anti or reducing agent. If you take so much that you experience a reducing atmosphere, that creates extreme damage from free radicals. So the ascorbic acid is functioning as a protective factor in the oxidized state of the cell. And the so-called plant-derived so-called antioxidants, like the flavonoids, are actually inside the cell. They're working like ascorbic acid as pro-oxidants, helping to deliver randomly reducing an electron pressure, converting it into a more oxidizing state that protects against the free radicals.
I'm sure you've seen the studies that show that aside from their carcinogenicity of some of the more heavy metals like lead or aluminum, basically the majority of their chronic damage comes from increasing oxidative stress. Would the same protective effect would be seen by supplementing with quinones or other oxidizing agents against other heavy metal toxicity except iron?
I haven't seen that demonstrated, but I'm sure it's happening. I think it could be demonstrated if you had the right quinones of the right oxidative potential.
If someone has heavy metal toxicity, what would be your generic approach to mitigating the damage and potentially, if it's even possible, getting those heavy metals out?
things like coffee to accelerate passage through the kidneys. Heavy coffee drinkers were found to have less heavy metal load, especially in their kidneys. And then the things rich in flavonoid type substances, such as orange juice and grape juice, have a huge protective effect.
But the direct chelation is potentially dangerous, right? Because it can spread all over the body.
Yeah.
Okay. So how would these flavonoids? What would be their mechanism of action if they're not chelators? And same for the coffee.
Essentially inactivating the free radical conduction and regeneration.
Okay, so if somebody has a buildup of some heavy metal, as long as they're protecting from the free radical damage, over time you're saying the body should be able to excrete that excess by its own mechanisms. There's no need for chelation.
Hans Selye did experiments with mercury that suggests that's how it works. With just the right amount of vitamin C, for example, you can put the mercury into a harmless valence that passes out of the body with various chelators.
Okay. What was I going to say? I forgot. Anyway, so let's go.
No worries. We'll go on to an advertisement here. Okay. The newsletter is available by email now. It's $30 for 12 issues over, I can't believe I'm screwing this, 3 years, Ray? What was the new schedule for the newsletter?
Four times a year. Okay. Not especially any particular time, but just on average one per quarter.
Got it. Okay, 12 issues, which can be paid through PayPal at raypeets@gmail.com. Ray's books are available by the emailing the same address from PMS to Menopause, Progesterone and Orthomu, Nutrition for Women. And then Progest-E from Kenogen, you can email Catherine to purchase Progest-E, kenogen@gmail.com. Each bottle of Progest-E contains 3,400 milligrams of progesterone. And you know, Ray, in my limited research on hair loss, it kept coming to my attention that I thought progesterone was like the hair protective hormone, of course, reading your work as well, and seeing it in spironolactone be used in kind of pre-finasteride or Propecia papers being used for hair loss, but why wouldn't just go ahead?
Those things are more profitable to promote, even though they have huge side effects. And the estrogen industry has propagandized for decades against progesterone because if it was realized that everything good about female hormones, protection against heart disease, for example, derives from progesterone, not from estrogen. If understanding progesterone goes too far, the estrogen industry suffers. After 2002, when they saw that synthetic progestins with estrogen caused increased mortality from heart disease and breast cancer and strokes, there is a tremendous shift towards the use of progesterone. And along with that came the estrogen industry financing all kinds of against progesterone.
And maybe for a young man or something losing hair listening to this, why wouldn't just taking progesterone be, why would that be kind of an impotent approach? Like why would that not be all that would be needed to correct that problem?
It has to go with general and especially elimination of in the modes of factors that block hair follicle. That includes good thyroid function, good vitamin D function, and adequate calcium, among other things. But progesterone with vitamin D and calcium and thyroid can not only for restoring hair growth, but for everything in health and natural resistance will be optimized.
Two comments here. First, the studies on cyproterone acetate and the other synthetic progestins, if you look at the dosages used for hair regrowth, they were using 600 to 800 milligrams daily. I don't know of that many people who tried using natural progesterone in those doses. So it's the reports are usually coming from people and saying, why is my hair not coming back? Also, a second comment, case report, a college buddy of mine, originally from Italy, mountain climber, basically lost all of his hair, classic androgenic alopecia, by the age of 22. We were roommates in college. And then he basically kind of gave up on civilization and went to live in a commune in the Tian Shan Mountains in Central Asia, in Kyrgyzstan. And he fully regrew his hair, has a full head of hair now, and refuses to come back to civilization, saying that it's essentially killing us, which I'm sure you'll fully agree with. And he lives at about 14,000 feet and says that life there is perfect, and he does not want to jeopardize it by coming back to and living at lower altitude. He only goes to Italy maybe once a year to see his parents, but other than that, he's given up on modern life.
The high altitudes, the only thing wrong with 14,000 feet is it's always cold, but there's very lower incidence of all of the degenerative diseases. I hadn't heard about hair growth, but dental health is very different at high altitude than at sea level. Heart disease is much lower at high altitude. Dementia, cancer, and I guess you could include premature hair loss as a degenerative disease. But that's interesting to hear that he had four.
Now, I see him maybe once every couple of years. If he even comes to the States, he doesn't do anymore. We sometimes exchange emails when he goes down to, forget what's the Kyrgyz city. He goes down once a month to check his email there. But he basically says it's not just the hair. He says that once you get out of the big city and go out in nature, he says that he cannot explain, but life is so much more real and full there. And he doesn't miss any of the amenities of civilization. He has water and electricity, and that's just about everything he needs to live a fulfilled life.
People, just mountain climbers, for many years have remarked on the euphoria, sense of well-being they feel when they get up to a high altitude. The first time I went up, fatigue on the long walk to the mountain, but after getting to about 7,000 or 8,000 feet, I felt like jumping and skipping and running the rest of the way.
So what do you think modern life offers as a benefit, if anything? Like, what's the indispensable thing that modern life offers that we cannot do without if we move to live in a...
I've never understood that, but billions of people don't move to the mountains.
They will quickly turn them into, I don't know, Disneyland or something.
Absolute last thing on this, then I'll let you go, Ray. Maybe you said it a long time ago that for hair loss, the intervention had to be proportional. People are always saying like, oh, you know, I know my friend who eats bad and keeps his hair and I'm losing my hair. Like that person losing hair and is in more advanced state of aging or stress, but that to a lot of people, that's not apparent that's what's happening. Would you agree with that?
You've probably heard of the increased aging of the circulatory system, bald people have that at a very high frequency, and it's an indication of the likelihood of a heart disease developing. And so it does show up in other aspects of the health.
And just before you leave, why does that happen? Like the circulatory system causes that defect in the ear?
The hair follicle has to produce energy vigorously. And if your systemic energy is being blocked in some way, the skin is one of the first places that can experience. You can live with quite a bit of atrophy of your hair and skin and nails, and still keep your lungs and brain working. So the skin and the thymus and a lot of the muscular systems, the blood vessels are protected a lot more than the skeletal muscles against stress and aging.
I really appreciate. Oh, go ahead, Ray. Did I cut you off, Ray?
What was that?
I thought I cut you off, but I was going to let you go. Because I don't want to keep you longer than an hour. Okay, Ray, sincerely appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us. Georgie Dinkov, thank you so much. Guys, thank you. We only had an hour today. But again, Ray, thank you so much. We went over so much in an hour, so I really appreciate it. Okay, everybody, have a safe weekend. We'll talk to you guys soon. Peace out. Take care. Okay, bye.